just ask the content advisor, Dr. Kinnis, just to have a broad overview before we start. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. The following commission made recommendations for subsequent IFIT to implement. The Minister of Police established an international panel of experts in accordance with the recommendations to look at policy issues for clinical trials. The Deputy Minister of Police established the SAPS Transformation Task Team, and they laid out a very, very elaborate plan for looking at the key issues in SAPS. We need to know that the National Development Plan remains the cornerstone of government policy with respect to the SAPS, especially Chapter 12 with respect to safer communities. There is an emphasis on professionalization and demilitarization of SAPS, something that the Farnham Commission has also raised. And one of the key issues in that Chapter 12 of the NDP is the development of a National Police Board, which is an important milestone which is yet to be achieved. Very important, Chair, to keep the SAPS out of the political domain and for them to remain professional. The recommendations of Farnham around the panel of experts to be created to, if you look there, to revise and amend all prescripts relevant to public order policing, investigate the world's best practices and measures available for use without resorting to the use of weapons capable of automatic fire where public order policing methods are inadequate. In public order policing institutions, operational decisions must be made by an officer in overall command with recent and relevant training, skills and expertise and experience in public order policing. All radio communication should be recorded and the recording should be preserved. Other recommendations, the plans for public order policing operations should identify the means of communication which SAPS members will use to communicate with one another. A protocol should be developed and the implementation for communication in large operations should include alternative mechanisms where available radio systems is such that it will not provide adequate means of communication. Other recommendations, the SAP should review the adequacy of the training of its members who specialize in equipment such as water cannons and video equipment. All SAP's helicopters should be equipped with functional video cameras. In the event where there is a high likelihood of the use of force, the plan should include the provision of adequate and speedy first aid to those who are injured. If you remember, first aid was one of the big recommendations, training in first aid for all members of SAPS. It also says that there should be a clear protocol which states that SAPS members should, with first aid training or on the scene of an incident where first aid is required, should administer first aid. Specialist firearm officers should receive additional training in the basic first aid skill needed to deal with gunshot wounds. The Commission adds that the recommendation by the National Planning Commission for demilitarization and professionalization of the police should be implemented as a matter of priority. The terms of reference is in four main groups to look at strategy and policy, is to review the recommendations of the Commission in line with the strategic imperatives, to advise the Minister on possible strategic policy interventions. These terms of references were put there by the South African Police Services in their presentation to us, Chair, when they did present on Farnham. They were also to, on public order processes and procedures, they were to review the existing public order processes and procedures in line with the recommendations of the Commission. They were to develop best practice models to be followed in public order policing in the country, and they were to advise the Minister and the SAPS on best practice recommendations to be used in all public order operations and the use of force operations. And then the fit-for-purpose equipment for public order police, they were to review all radio and video communications equipment available to SAPS and to review all public order equipment available to SAPS, and then to develop guidelines on fit-for-purpose equipment and non-lethal equipment to be used in all public order operations and the use of force environment, and then to advise the Minister and SAPS on the best practice and approach and viability of such equipment. And then the professionalization of the police, to review the state of transformation in SAPS, to develop a framework for transformation, and that is what the panel of, the transformation panel is doing, and then to review the availability and suitable skills required in the SAPS in general, but also focusing on public order policing unit, and then make recommendations to the Minister to recommend to the Minister the training programs and approaches towards professionalization. If we move on demilitarization, they were to define and contextualize demilitarization of the police in the South African context,
to review the extent and militaristic nature of the SAPs and advise the minister and recommend best practices and approach to address the problem. The provision of first aid training to members of the SAPs. Review the commission's recommendation on the provision of first aid to members of SAPs and then recommend training programs on how to close the current gap and then advise the minister on best practices and approach to address the gap. Accountability and transparency in all SAPs operations to review the commission's recommendations relating to the lack of transparency and accountability in the operations of the SAPs and then to review the role, regulations, procedures and capacity of IFED as far as it relates to accountability and transparency in the SAPs and then to advise the minister on best practice models and recommend processes to address the gaps. The standing orders should be more clearly require a full audit trail and adequate recording of SAPs operations, and the SAPs and its members should accept that they have a duty of public accountability and truth-telling because of the exercise of force on behalf of all South Africans, the Commission states. The staffing and the resourcing of the IPED should be reviewed to ensure that it is able to carry out its functions effectively.
Irvin, I think you must just skip that because
okay.
It says incorrectly led by a retired judge.
Okay.
The task team is not led by a retired judge. It's a
panel
of experts. So can we maybe just skip that and then go to the conclusion?
We've had presentations to the Committee on Demilitarization and Professionalism over the last 2 years. In his presentation to the panel in 2015, August, the minister indicated that the panel will have a 15-month lifespan, which comes to an end. And the committee should inquire if the transformation panel has completed its work and what plans are going forward. And the question of equipment and first aid training must be addressed by the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for that. Right, let's start with the panel of experts. Judge, are you ready? You're welcome. Thank you. We don't know the gentleman, he must just introduce himself. Mr. de Klerk, please.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members of the Portfolio Committee and members of SAPS and others present. I'll be doing the report back on behalf of the panel of experts. I'm Aldred de Klerk, a member of the panel. I'm just calling it up and... Yes. Chair, it's been a long period of working together as a panel, and I want to thank all the panel members and all those who made various contributions to us as a panel. Our progress report will outline from the very beginning, as the members will see, is that we as a panel have accepted that through the President of the country, Parliament and the Cabinet, that the report from the Marikana Commission has been accepted unreservedly and unconditionally. Our job then was to make sure that what went wrong, that we need to make right. That was our very simple orientation, and that what happens should never happen again. To that end, Chair, we understood that as a country and as a state, we have a duty to seize any violation, whether it's under national or international law, and to ensure that it does not happen again, and we have a duty to repair the damages caused by such a violation. So if I can move on to the second slide. In looking at Marikana and looking at its impact on us as a country and as a region, we understood that there was loss of life and injury, and that's a damage cause. We also understood that there was a potential damage, and there was damage to the confidence of the state to protect its people. We understood that as a damage to the credibility of the police and other law enforcement agencies as institutions of state. We also understood that there was a damage to police-community relations. And this is something that we also take seriously and to the image of the police more broadly. There was a damage to the livelihoods of all those affected by Marikana, their families and communities. And one of the critical causal factors for Marikana was this notion of collective bargaining and what happens with the unions and how mine strikes and the right to protest and the right to strike and how disputes are resolved within our labor sector. And we thought that there was a damage to the efficacy and credibility of that process, and that has to be reviewed going forward. Go to the following slide. It's not the panel. I'll skip to the second paragraph on that slide and just say that it's not the panel particularly that's going to look at compensation for victims and families and reparations, but it is something that the panel considers necessary, and it's something that we've kept an eye on. The panel also wants to pronounce itself on Lonmin and what happened there, and how they were also a source of the conflict at Marikana. Because what happens with collective bargaining, very quickly, members, is that there seems to be a preference to work with what they call the dominant or majority union, and our collective bargaining prescripts actually says that everybody should be part of the process, not just the dominant or majority union. So there's a vying by unions to be the dominant dominant or majority union, so that they in fact can determine both the process and seek to influence the outcome of any collective bargaining process. And that's against the prescripts, our own and also International Labour Organization prescripts, and we've looked at that and we will pronounce ourselves at that. The emphasis of the work of the panel, if I could just quickly take members through that, we divided it up into a number of thematic focus areas. Let me say from the outset, Chair and members, that what we're seeking to do is look at making sure that our South African police service and laws enforcement agencies bring a principled approach to their work. So we looked at what principles govern policing, both locally, nationally, and regionally, and that any such institution should be one staffed by competent members and fit for purpose and competent for the role that they fulfill. And that there's a regime of both public and political governance of such institutions. And that means both governed by policy and prescript, but governed by oversight before, during, and after any police action and operations. Political and public authorities may not be responsible for how police do what they do or necessarily determine what they do, but they are accountable and should hold police accountable for how they do what they do and what the impact of that performance is, and seek to either review it, correct it, and whether the issue lies in policy or performance or competencies or capability or capacity, that should be corrected. So getting back to our broad emphasis of our work, as Dr. Kinnis has already introduced and said, that we have taken our lead from the National Development Plan and our terms of reference, and that professionalism, demilitarization, and governance for us as a broad thematic cross-cutting themes. And that would include credible and competent leadership. Because there was a big focus on the leadership around Marikana, how decisions were made, how that was shared, obfuscation that followed. And we need to make sure that that is corrected in the broad and in the main. Governance needs to promote accountability, transparency, and integrity. And one of the critical things that SAPS has committed itself to, not only through the panel of experts, but as the leadership team, was to consequence management. And we want to hold them to that, Chair and members. Demilitarization for us is part of the project to civilianize the police, as to ensure that as a civilian entity, that they responsible to a civilian authority, and then in the end, they account particularly for their use of force. And that is part of their command and control. And we have loads of discussions around command and control. What does it intend? How do we ensure that decisions and commands are given by competent officers, and especially when it comes to the management of crowd and public disorder? The principles of policing for us, we've taken from consultations as experts broadly with the UN, ICRC, and other Amnesty International and other members who've made submissions to the Marikana Commission and also to us as a panel. And those broad principles will look at issues of precaution. Police have a duty to anticipate what can happen when they decide to take a particular course of action. And in doing that, they should seek to mitigate and look to de-escalate and avoid the potential for violence. That's a principle. It's not something that is, and it's accepted as such. De-escalation should always be at the center of any crowd management or public order operation. There is no other way to do it. You engage, you step back, you make sure that you de-escalate and not escalate the situation by the actions you take. Non-discrimination, you cannot determine by looking at who's seeking to process or assemble or gather and say, well, you know, it's such and such a crowd and therefore we can deal with them in such and such a way. If there are citizens, subjects or others of South Africa visiting or otherwise, we should not discriminate on the basis of the cause or those assembled. Distinction is a nuanced nature of how do you deal with every particular situation. Rather than categorize all situations as potentially violent, which is probably true, and the police's experience has shown that, they still need to distinguish one protest action from the other. And we know that the committee has pronounced itself chair on the levels 1, 2, and 3, and you've invited the South African Police Service to go and look at their risk and situational assessment, and we're in accord with you on that. One of the critical things about Marikana was the decision to intervene. There was a decision taken that the police will act on a particular day and seek to pursue a particular set of outcomes or goals, even if they couldn't necessarily anticipate the outcome. A critical international governing principle taken on by regional chiefs of police, the African Union, and beyond is the question of non-intervention. And non-intervention, Chair, doesn't mean you do nothing. Non-intervention is harder than intervening because it's seeking to ensure that every intervention you take is in line with the outcomes of the Regulations of Gathering Act that judges the success of a police operation on the basis of injuries caused, damage caused, both to reputations, to property, and to persons. So non-intervention is a very hard thing to do, to tell our police to sometimes step back and take it, so to speak. For that, of course, they've got to be equipped, and they've got to be trained, and they've got to be competent, and they've got to be under competent command. We did look at equipment infrastructure and communications, and the subject advisor, Dr. Irvin, has already read out what those are supposed to mean and achieve. And one of the critical things around communication is the question of how command decisions are made, given by who, how they're preserved, so they can be reflected on, learned from, and make sure that going forward, we ensure that we actually learn from experiences so that we can have much more competent and effective policing going. Infrastructure, public order policing infrastructure, you would hear from our colleagues in SAPS how public order capacity has diminished over time, and now they're seeking to correct that. There is no dedicated facility for public order training, and we know and we have heard from the frustration of our public order commanders. There's also a distinction between urban and rural and environments. The equipment is dated, it needs to be agile, mobile, and allow them to actually engage. General equipment provisions is affected by decreasing budgets and fiscal constraints. All those things have to be managed. They're not beyond being managed, but they also determine what kind of reasonable expectation we have of our public order units. It also is affected by their dual mandate, and that they have a mandate not only for public order policing and crowd management, they also seem to have a mandate to do crime prevention and get involved in other operations. And with your guidance, chair and the guidance of the members of the House and the SAPs, we may have to revisit and look at their mandate, and we as a panel have a particular opinion about that. Moving on then to the appointment of senior command staff in line with the National Development Plan. All that we really are saying is that we need to consider how these members are appointed, that their process should be transparent. The basis and criteria on which they've been appointed should be understood and acknowledged. And that they must present themselves for appointment. And that part of that appointment is an integrity and skills audit. And that's also in line with the National Development Plan, the notion of a complete audit of senior command staff. To that end, Chair, we've also been tasked by looking at a two-tier system. What is happening currently in SAPS is they're beginning members leaving very highly skilled jobs. We had a warrant officer recently, and we were told last week, Chair, about this, who had to seek, after 25 years of service, had to seek a captain's position in a complete different unit, leaving a void in the forensics ballistic unit, I think is what it was. A two-tier system where you have a professional track and a management track would allow us to remunerate members accordingly, acknowledge their skills, and keep them in a role that they enjoy, that they're competent for, and that they actually can make the greatest contribution. And that means uncoupling those ranks from the laborious or just from ranks. Uncouple it from ranks. There's a confusion between rank and role in SAPS. And we have looked at this both from the Dutch system, who've successfully done this. We know that it happens in our local intelligence community. And we've studied other systems where they have a two-tier system, and we will pronounce ourselves on that. Skipping on to the Regulations of Gathering Act, the critical thing there is this golden triangle, the role of local municipalities and the role of the responsible officer. South African Police Service actually have a very small remit in the Regulations of Gatherings Act, initially on the front, well, on the front end of it anyway, when decisions are made and submissions to assemble, gather, or protest is actually lodged. And we feel that there's been abuse of that act. That act has currently been in challenge in our courts, and we actually feel that SAP should come in as part of a respondent, not only as a respondent, but actually to seek to learn from those challenges and make sure that we amend, review, or critically focus at least on the incoherencies, both definitionally and the actual practice around the Regulations of Gatherings Act. So too with National Instruction 4 of 2014. This was not the national instruction that was in operation at the time of Marikana. That was Standing Order 262. National Instruction 4 of 2014 followed Marikana, and we questioned why. We questioned what was the shortcomings of Standing Order 262. And we spent a lot of time reviewing this, because the basis for Standing Order 262 and even our Regulations of Gatherings Act, remember, was supported by a period prior and just following our 1994 elections, where both the capacity and the commitment of state was to ensure not only peaceful protest, but that it worked in collaboration with the people it sought to serve. And that it drew on a wide range of civil and state capacities in dealing with conflicts that afflicted us as a country and that confronted us as a nation. So why did we lose that principal position? It shouldn't and can't be just a simple bureaucratic exercise of ticking boxes. And the strongest part of that should be the planning, even for spontaneous. We know it's difficult when police are confronted by so-called spontaneous gatherings. And to that end, they've said they need more quality information and they need to be led by intelligence. And we've looked at that, and we will express an opinion on that. Chair, we've also heard as part of the introduction, and moving on to the slide with the use of force, around the use of weapons capable of automatic fire. When it comes to public order policing and the use of such weapons, we have it on record, and our South Africa Police Service leadership and command and members have committed themselves and have expressed themselves by saying that weapons are capable of automatic fire has no place in managing crowds. And we accept that. We accept, too, that they have a commitment to using less than lethal weapons. We accept, too, that they would embrace the principles of non-intervention and de-escalation, of seeking to resolve it through using skills, time, and patience, quite frankly. Public order policing the world over is a war of attrition. Fit, competent officers will always outlast and outweigh members of the public who have other demands on their time and their energies. There may also be a need to reconcile and bring together the various use of force prescripts out of the Regulations of Gathering Act, the Criminal Procedure Act, and other such acts to make sure that we have one use of force policy, at least from a principled point of view. And we know that the Civilian Secretariat is leading on this, and we are lending our voice to the need for such a policy. The peculiar nature of Marikana, as much as there's an argument that it's the exception rather than the rule, the one glaring thing that it did show us is our ability to command and control large and complex operations. There were four different units involved in Marikana, to the best of my knowledge, each with their own mandate and interest, each with their own capability and resources. That needed to be commanded. So we've looked at a command structure and a way to address large and complex special operations. We do it well when it comes to events. We need to do it daily when it comes to the right to peaceful protest. Our training, we've spent a lot of time visiting SAPS training institutions, speaking to members undergoing training chair, speaking to trainers, and speaking to commanders as to how we can train for competency. So we're not just training. We need to train for competence. We need to train for role. And to that end, we need to understand what competencies are required. And thanks here to both our SAPS members and to our visiting international experts from the Netherlands, Russia, Zimbabwe, and elsewhere, who have extensive experience around the world in UN CIVPOL civilian policing operations, and who could help us craft a set of competencies and criteria for public order members. And I am pleased to say that SAPS is in particularly on board with that too. There is something, though, about the current context of protests in South Africa. We crafted the Dangerous Weapons Act particularly because we had a certain public milieu when it comes to public protests. Now, we may call it traditional weapons, but sharp-edged weapons, heavy weapons, at close quarters can do a lot of damage. And if we expect our public order police officers to suck it up, if you may excuse my language, and to be colloquial about it, and to stand in the face of potential harms to themselves and their fellow officers, then we have to resource them properly. And we have to bring a broader remit of actors to play when it comes to the resolution of protest action for which the police actually is not the ones who's going to resolve it. So other departments of state, and particularly local government, councillors and others, have a larger role to play in resolving these ongoing conflicts to which the police at the front end are trying to ensure that they stay peaceful. And the particular use of violence to draw attention to issues is also something that we broadly, all of us, have a responsibility to address through Parliament, through our tiers of spheres of government, and other leadership. has to be brought to bear on addressing this particular milieu and current context of public protest in South Africa. A critical issue about Marikana was the notion of planning, and that goes for any crowd management in broad public protest situation. Planning, planning, planning. How planning is done, how planning accounts for operational objectives, logs, and we've heard tales, Chair, and to members of the armaments, for example, used at Marikana. And now these were people didn't know where they were coming from. They were just there. Things were thrown out of helicopters. We don't know how that person got their hands on it. So it's critical that as part of a planning, and we've given you a set of graphs early on where we tried to bring all of this together in a sort of matrix or a diagram to see how it all fits together. That planning of an operation is critical. So one of the suggestions we have beyond, and I know SAPS has a planning training, a dedicated planning training program, and we want to support that. We've reviewed the content of that. It's a dedicated commander training center in line with international best practice, that commanders at all tiers are graded. So your operational commander, your overall commander, your commander sitting in the joint operations center are graded, are assessed, have proven competencies, and are vested with authorities for the use of force, for tactical for exploring tactical options, and for setting what we call tolerance levels. And our broad report that will be co-authored by all members of the panel, including SAPS, will pronounce itself and clarify what we mean by all of that, Chair. Let me move swiftly on to the next slide. You've heard the issue of IPED, and critically, the fact, and it's been offered in this committee when IPED reported and I happened to be here, was the reconstruction of Scene 2. There are still lessons to be learned at Marikana. But the reconstruction of Scene 2 is also critical to seek to correct the harm and damage caused at that Scene 2. It has implications for potential prosecutions. An IPED cannot be stifled or frustrated in the efforts to finish their investigation when it comes to Marikana 5 years down the line. But IPED forms also part of the Department of Police that has the civilian secretariat that needs to be strengthened so they can do research, consider their policies, and specifically the impact of policies and the daily use of policy. That they can help police craft principled prescripts and principled regulations. There's also CSIRA, the Private Security Industries Regulatory Authority. The role of private security in crowd management in public order situations, and we've seen it, the fees must fall. It's a critical area of focus for both this committee and for Parliament and for CSIRA and for the Department of Police. They've taken on a gap, and they're equipping themselves, they're outgunning and out-arming the South African Police Service, and if effectively, to our end and to our mind, maybe causing more harm than good. So it's about setting qualities and about setting standards, and yes, that may be a negotiation, but it's unapologetic that we have to set the standards for policing so we can get the police we deserve. And then it's about controlling and testing those standards and making sure that in the daily expression, as police seek to uphold their job and do it in a way that endears them to us, the public they serve, that we learn from every police action. Critically as well, when it comes to police, and we've put it up there, is the question of succession planning. We have an aging police leadership. And we cannot continue to have a top-heavy police officer corps. So we do, though, need to consider investing in our police officers so that we grow. The next batch of officer, senior officer command corps, sorry. And because it's about investing in people, not just technologies, not just capabilities and capacities, but investing in people. So the various departments within the police, who's responsible for the succession planning, for who's responsible for making sure that the next tier of leadership in the police is in place, has to be called to account and ask, what are they doing? There's natural attrition. There's large levels of frustration. And yet police continue to be committed daily to seek to do the best they can. And we need to seek to help and support them. If I can move on very quickly, Chair, and I'll just say that in our endeavors as South Africa, one of the things that we say as the panel that the police and law enforcement agencies, we look to them to keep us safe. We want to make sure that in how they keep us safe and how they work with us to ensure that, that the vulnerabilities we face, the risks we face, and the threats we face are managed successfully, they need to do that with dignity. Our Constitution says that if nothing else, we as South Africans and those who happens to be in our borders at the time should be treated with dignity. We are entitled to dignity. We understand that police are vested with certain authorities, and to some extent they can violate our rights. When they do so, they have to account for that. And yet, even as they restrict our rights, whether it's our right, our freedom of movement, whether they confine ourselves, or whether they use force against us, even in doing so, dignity still as the yardstick for the quality of how that should be done. We're moving towards ending by just saying that the panel is in a privileged position to have the members of the panel that we have. And we want to thank those countries who have committed those members and the vision of our parliament and this committee to draw those members together. The Minister of Police, the Honourable Fikile Mbalula, has said that one of the things he wishes us to do is to take the work of the panel chair and make sure that we subjected to public scrutiny and peer review. So the panel is committing itself as it completes its work to hold a two and a half day, we're not quite sure, program of engagements around the substance of our work. So there's public scrutiny of, review of it, but there's also public ownership of it. Because the document is for public ownership. It's for public expression, and it's for all of us to ensure that we take from it and make sure that it actually happens. Part of what we failed to do, and we've acknowledged this in the process, is have a communication strategy where we keep you informed more regularly about how we did what we did. And we've spoken about this with the senior command of both the ministry and SAPS in their top management meeting. And one of the things that they will look at was how do we roll out, both beyond the public engagement around our work, some sort of communication strategy where parts of our work and the broad thematic areas are made known and we are held accountable for it. If I go to the implementation diagram, I'm not going to go through all of those because it's there. All that really says is that we've looked at our task from a strategic, broad, principled, competency-based program, where we're also looking to reduce complaints and civil claims against the police, where their performance is under constant and appropriate review, and where to what we call tactical, where the tactics for daily police operations and routine police practices it's under the command and authority of competent police commanders, who sets down defensive and offensive tactics when it comes to crowd management, and especially the use of force. And that gets expressed then through appropriate police operations and what governs those operations. And there it's critical when it comes to audits of those operations, both the decisions made at that level, the armaments expended, the logs where they should be recorded, because the prescripts are there. We should not have difficulty in going to find the history and record of an operation after an operation. It's just that simple, because the prescripts are there. There needs to be a legal basis for all police decision-making. It's that simple. Police need to understand what, if you make a decision, it needs to be in the basis of law. So we've looked at the legal prescripts, and we've looked at the regulations that follow from these legal prescripts to see if they're in line with international best practice. And we're going to bring to this committee and to Parliament this notion of protecting property, for example. This idea that police are tasked with protecting property, that they can shoot and kill somebody in protection of property. The emerging discourse and consensus globally on this is very simple. And that is, yes, you can protect property where in the destruction or the attack on that property there's an imminent threat to life. That's what should govern it. It's the imminent threat to life. And we've spent a lot of time with legal services and the police looking at this. We've looked at the local conventions. I think we're closer to some sort of broad consensus that will govern this. And again, that will be something that I think will be hotly debated, Chair, going forward. So skipping right along, you can just click through all of that, please, if you wouldn't mind. That's just a visual representation that as police use force, and particularly firearms, the prospects of the peaceful resolution of any conflict actually diminishes. It's that simple. So the harder you hit, the less prospect there is for a peaceful and sustainable resolution to a conflict. And again, we've spent time looking at this and what the diminishing returns are when force is escalated. So I'll move along. That brings together our, for public order policing, what we call the principled approach to managing public disorder and the prevention of disorder, or the precaution around that. And SAPS already has in place this negotiated crowd management, where conflict resolution and negotiation, and they now have a 2-week program in conflict resolution, and we've looked at that, and that's my particular interest. And I've spent a lot of time with General Marquinazzi and his team and others, and General Kuz of them. At least we've debated this, but I've spent time with General Marquinazzi, particularly looking at that particular program, and I think that they're doing well, and that there's still some work to do. The governing, and the only thing I want to draw attention to there, Chair, and members can ask questions afterwards, is this question of the doctrine of exhaustion of remedies. Before any overt use of force or display of force is used, all remedies to bring any conflict or any protest or any disorder to a peaceful resolution needs to be exhausted. And in principle, I think we can all accept that. It's very hard to do in practice. And yet that is why we're saying that we need to grow the timber of our members. The model of command and control of large and special operations. The only thing I want to put down there is this notion of setting tolerance levels. for us to, in a protest or gathering or assembly, engage our general public and saying this will be tolerated and this will not be tolerated. It's a conversation that simply has to be had on a front line. As things change and escalate, it's your command staff who determines how the police respond and take responsibility for making that decision, given the authority vested in them, given their experience and their level of competency, for determining the police's tactical response to a change in circumstances on the ground. While at the same time, that two-way conversation with the entire crowd or the leadership of that crowd still needs to be sought. So nothing up there is significantly easy. Is it necessary? Yes. Do we have to support police in pursuing this? Of course. Can we achieve it? Without a doubt. So let me end by saying that this, we hope, will bring to members a more nuanced and a much more detailed understanding of how we've seen our various task performances under each of the broad categories that we've outlined, and that all we can do now is suffice to thank both this panel, our panel, and the members. But we also particularly want to thank those people who've been of service to the panel. And we have it up there. Captain DeSeco Lucky, if you would just stand, where's Captain Lucky? In the absence of a project management officer, Captain Lucky had to step into the gap, both in terms of simple things like payment and logistics, arranging accommodations. And we want to thank him, because he's in and above his usual task, he did all this, and he's been doing it for months. So we wanted to thank him. We wanted to also thank our former PO, Nashrika, or Nashi as we fondly call her, for the work that she's done. We have a current PMO, Steve Sabalala. Where's Steve? Oh, he's right next to me. Because without project management support, a lot of what we do will not happen. Because members are spread across the country and the globe, and to bring us all together, to allow us to walk, to work and walk daily, unabated, and continue to focus on our work. And we also want to thank our members of the South African Police Service, who's an integral part of the panel. General Cruiser, he's around, took up his seat. General Makonazi, there's two Makonazis. Legal Services, we've got General Jacobs, we've got Brigadier Ali. Those are the core members of our South African Police Service who's been involved. And then we have from the Civilian Secretariat, Ms. Bolka Suma. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. de Klerk. Judge, do you've got anything to add?
Chair, that is the route that we have determined to take, and that is the extent our journey through that process. For the rest, I, as Chair, could not have put it better than what he has done. I thank you.
No, thank you very much for the presentation. I think the presenter also raised fundamental issues that we're also going to focus on next week when we focus on the NDP. Where are the Department of Police in terms of implementing the chapter dealing with policing in the NDP? So I think those issues of leadership, accountability, very important, and of course succession planning, that's major issues I think also next week. But let's take the second presentation from the task team, and then we'll go to the members. General, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. If it's fine with you, Chair, shall I imitate the judge by delegating the PMO to do the presentation, please?
Okay, thanks very much, Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee. the leadership of South African Police Service. I must also indicate that we also have the legal advice of the minister, Mr. Edin Swane. The presentation will focus on the four main headings. That is the first one, the background, which under which we'll be touching on the transformation strategic direction, the key implications and points of attention raised by Falam Commission on the South African Police Service, or what is known as Marikana Commission of Inquiry. The scope of the ministerial sub-transformation task team, and the summary of NDP resolutions, which is included in the scope. Then secondly, it will be the transformation task team phase implementation as stipulated in the administration instruction 6 of 2016. Then the implementation progress report. And lastly, we'll be dealing with the draft annual performance plan, which is also identifying the key priorities in actualizing the ministerial sub-transformation task team mandate.
Sorry, sir, can I stop you there? We received a presentation from SAPS. Is it the same presentation? I see yours is marked secret. I presume it's now unclassified.
Yes, it's the same presentation.
General?
I think there was there is another presentation. We forwarded three presentations. The other one talks to progress made by the SAPS in implementing the recommendations. Thanks.
Yeah,
it's the right presentation for the transformation.
Yeah, but I mean, we haven't received the hard copy of that. So I think it's quite critical that we have to receive hard copies for the members. Is it possible that we can have that?
Can I arrange that?
Thank you very much. Okay, you can go ahead. Thank you.
Okay. Moving to the next slide, which deals with the transformation strategic direction. I'm sure this was presented previously, Chairperson. I would not really go into that, just to indicate that the ultimate strategic vision, as envisaged in the National Development Plan, is to make South Africa that is safe and build a national asset that South Africans are proud of and the police officers are proud to serve in. So those are the goals as indicated there, the main missions, so how we can be able to actualize that vision. I would not be really going through this, Chair, because it was presented previously. Yes. And then the second slide, I would also pass it, but just go to the main task team mandate. One is to investigate the world's best practices and measures available for use regarding micro-criminality and syndicated crime, formulate a proposal regarding the other aspects of sub-transformation, organization and culture change, professionalism and demilitarization, receive and integrate recommendations from an independent panel of experts, which has just presented now. Then strengthen the criminal justice system. A safe South Africa would not be achieved without a strong criminal justice system. Make the police service professional, as we believe that the professional police service is essential for a strong criminal justice system. Then demilitarize the police service. Build safe using an integrated approach. Achieving a long-term sustainable safety requires an integrated approach focused on tackling the fundamental causes of criminality. Then building community participation in community safety. Then the phase in implementation, Chairperson, will be dealing with the administration instruction has segmented the task of the ministerial sub-transformation task team into five phases. The first one, which is the introduction of the ministerial sub-transformation task team members to all sub-national heads of entities. The strategic planning workshop, which is to look at the terms of references, the annual performance plan with budget, communication strategy should be also be developed from that workshop. Then phase three, the benchmarking of the best practice, both local and international. That is in terms of the requirements of the National Development Plan. Then phase four, auditing and reviewing of policies, national instructions, standing orders, and operational standards of the SAPS. The intention here is to review and amend the SAPS Act, the career progression and the promotion of policies reviewed, and the health and wellness of the SAPS employees. Then the last phase will be the final review report that will be presented to the minister or the executive authority for implementation. Now, on the implementation progress report, the project management office has been appointed in July this year. It's been finalized. The appointment of administrators that will be working on the project is in advanced stage. The memorandum of understanding between SAPS and CIRA has been finalized, and the chairperson's office is well capacitated in terms of having an office and the secretary. The task team introduced and is in operation. Then the planning workshop and it was done and finalized, since it has come with a performance plan or identified the key priorities in actualizing its mandate. The four strategic thrusts of the Ministerial Transformation Task Team mandate were established in terms of the work streams that will be dealing with different issues that are identified there. The first one is policy and legislative review, then second, legal, third, human resource, and fourth, operations. The draft annual plan has been, the draft is finalized. The panel of experts, we are envisaging that it will be finalizing its report by the end of November, and then it will be given to the Ministerial Sub-Transformation Task Team for implementation. Now, Chair, when we go further, I just want to also emphasize that the Ministerial Sub-Transformation Task Team main responsibilities, in accordance with the Administration Instruction 6 of 2016, is one, professionalizing police service, demilitarizing police service, improving the living conditions of police officers, and improving the working conditions of the police officers. Now, the task team has also taken to cognizance of the fact that SAPS as a department has been working on actualizing the NDP 2030 vision or objectives. And secondly, the task team is also aware that the panel of experts is also working on a number of issues regarding the NDP vision actualization by developing well-researched recommendations for Ministerial Sub-Transformation Task Team to implement. As a result, the draft APP identified priorities that should be considered for achieving its responsibility or mandate. Now, the following priorities were identified under the professionalization of police service, research paper that needs to be developed, state of policing in South Africa, including the method of policing since 1995, development of competency assessment tools to establish quality and character of police members. Now, on this one, we are also aware that SAPS has developed a competency assessment, and the task team is to evaluate and assess its effectiveness. Now, the analysis of the SAPS recruitment to retirement strategy. Even on this one, we are aware that there is a strategy that has been developed, but it will be given to the task team to for checking its impact. The assessment of alignment of the SAPS performance management framework with TPSA and Treasury guidelines. Still on the professionalization of police service, the research paper on SAPS training and development, looking at the global best practices, assessment of training facilities, equipment and infrastructure on Marikana Commission recommendations, change management, development of conceptual framework that facilitates adherence to oath of office, develop a strategy on the implementation of oath of office and code of conduct. And on these two, we are also aware that the panel of experts is also working on it, and we are awaiting their recommendations. On the professionalization, we still continue on professionalization of police, development of national policy policy in terms of Section 206 of the South African Constitution, align transformations of subs to eight dimensions of transformations of public service, which is also known as Batopele principles, analysis of minimum standards required for entering the subs. On this one, we also are aware that SAPS has developed a community-based recruitment strategy, which has been we developed, but it will be presented to the task team for evaluation. Analysis of existing technology management systems for effective policing. Develop an integrated knowledge management strategy plan. Conduct technology management solution systems integration and analysis. Auditing guidelines on strategic deployment of resources based on demands, police station profiles, and environmental studies. Analysis of the quality and functionality of detective services. And on this one, we also noted that SAPS is currently running the Detective Commanders Learning Program, which would also be tabled to the task for evaluation. Analysis on the current barriers affecting the reporting of sexual offences, review National Police Board framework. We are also aware that the panel of experts is working on that one. Review the process of policy development between the civilian secretariat and the SAPS. Communication strategy and plan awareness of the Marikana Falam Commission recommendations. And lastly, selection and appointment of National Commissioner and Deputy National Commissioner, which Ms. Litlag has also dealt with. Now, on delimitarization of the police service, the following priorities have been identified. That is implementation of the approved recommendations from the panel of experts, as I've indicated. Conduct impact study on SAPS ranks, which is also part of the work of the panel of experts. Review the SAPS organizational culture. Review the current guidelines on community policing. Now, on delimitarization of the police, still continue civilization-based service charter, determine citizen image, trust, and needs. Develop the smart policy strategy, say cities and countries that conforms to the Constitution and NDP resolutions. Obtain and analyze policies, national instructions, standing orders, MOUs, and operating standards. Now, on improving the living conditions of police officers, the following priorities have been identified. The salary structures and levels of police officers optimized to meet basic conditions of service conducive to working conditions. And on this one, we are also aware that the PwC, the PricewaterhouseCoopers, have been appointed to determine the defendable salary for police officers at all levels. And the comparative study has been done on the national police agencies as well as international. So once that report has been finalized, it will also be considered by the panel of by the transformation task team. Review national instruction on placement, transfers, transporting, and accommodation for police officers. And on this one, Chair, we are also aware that the National Instruction 6 of 2005 has been reviewed. That is dealing with the appointment of levels 1 to 12. The National Instruction 10 of 2017 on the advertising of posts. The National Instruction 11 of 2017 that deals with the SMS appointments has both been approved by the National Acting National Commissioner. Now, the review career path and the progression of police officers from entry to exit, review living conditions of police officers. On improving the working conditions of the police officers, assess the restructuring of medical aid benefits, funds.
Sorry, can we maybe just stop the bus there? How many pages does your presentation have?
It's only one.
Okay, great. Okay. Because, this wish list, we already had it as a presentation, and but it's fine. You can continue.
Okay, thanks, Chair. This is the last one on improving the working conditions. Assess the health and wellness program for all police officers. Assess the restructuring pension fund, benefit structure, fund financial model, payment processes, management, and allocation of services to police officers based on the working conditions. And the last three priorities are to conduct a work study on ratio analysis of police officials to the targeted population, determine equipment, resources and apparel comfort, use and practical applications to job specification, then assessments of physical fitness to all police officers. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think just for future reference, please make it available early to the committee that it can be presented to members and also use a spell check. You're coming to the portfolio committee, sir. Right, let's get the final presentation. General, thank you.
Maybe, Chair, before the final presentation, Chair, from this presentation, it's evident that there is an overlap between the responsibilities of the panel of experts and the transformation task team, and that is informed by reason that our roles flow both from the recommendations of the Falam Commission and also the National Development Plan. We did work on a draft APP, and most of the work will be concretized once we received a report from the panel of experts, which is where we will be implementing. Chair, thank you very much. I will then talk to the presentation that is prepared from the SAPS perspective. Thank you very much. The first slide, Chair, talks to the table of content, whereby we'll be talking to the back-to-basics approach, being our strategy, and then we will be talking to progress made within the public order police. We will be talking to demilitarization of the South African Police Service, progress made, professionalization of the South African Police Service, progress made in respect of recruitment and selection, human resource development, employee health and wellness, promoting ethical conduct and integrity, discipline and consequence management, and lastly, performance management and accountability. This slide, Chair, reflects that our mandate as informed by the Constitution, Sections 205(3) and Section 195, and also further from the SAPS Act, that is the legislative framework. But also, Chair, the policy framework is informed by the National Development Plan, which is where the issues of professionalization, demilitarization, the increase of community participation, and strengthening of the criminal justice system emanate from, and then further, the JCPS cluster, which is where it is said that all people of South Africa should feel safe, and the creation of a better South Africa. And also, towards working on our strategy, we took into consideration the ministerial priorities, and we also have the strategic direction, the back to basics, which will ensure that we are able to respond to the legislative framework and the direction from the MTSF. Having understood our mandate, Chair, we then came up with the back to basics approach, which we have spoken to several times. And for purposes of this discussion, the emphasis will be on progress made in respect of the three priorities. However, I will still allude to the other priorities. We have got nine priorities. The first one being the enhanced police visibility, and then the second one, a thorough and responsive investigation of every crime. The third one, efficient utilization of resources in support of the investigation of crime, followed by the crime intelligence in support of proactive and reactive policing, targeted and informed deployment of resources, collaborative and consultative approach to policing, and then the last three, which I indicated the focus will be mostly on, that is transformation of the SAPS, including demilitarization and professionalizing, integrity and discipline, uncompromising compliance with the fundamentals of fundamental principles of policing and the culture of performance and management accountability. This slide, Chair, seeks to contextualize our back-to-basics approach to say, what do we mean with these priorities, Chair? And the first one that talks to enhanced police visibility, we are saying, for us to have achieved, we'll expect that public will acknowledge that there is an increased physical presence of the SAPS, including personnel, vehicles, and infrastructure. And the thorough and responsive investigation of every crime, and for us to have achieved, there should be effective and efficient application of the case docket management process in respect of every reported crime and regular feedback to complainants. In respect of the third one, the efficient utilization of resources in support of the investigation of crime, we are saying for us to have achieved, there must be all available investigative aids and resources optimally utilized in the investigation of crime. And under crime intelligence in support of proactive and reactive policing, for us to have achieved, there must be actionable crime intelligence used proactively and reactively in the prevention and investigation of crime. And under the targeted informed deployment of resources, for us to have achieved, all operational resources deployed in accordance with the proper crime analysis or crime intelligence targeting vulnerable areas. And for us to have achieved towards collaborative, consultative approach to policing, we must have a systematic and comprehensive involvement of all relevant stakeholders in all aspects of policing. And for transformation of SAPS that talks to professionalization, demilitarization, integrity, and discipline, for us to have achieved, the public perceptions will have to indicate that the SAPS and its personnel are professional and accountable. And for uncompromising compliance with the fundamental principles of policing, for us to have achieved, there should be adherence to the rules that govern the organization control framework, that is doing the right things right every time. And then for us to have achieved towards a culture of performance management and accountability, we'll have to ensure that there is linking of actual performance to planned performance and ensuring corrective action where required. I will now talk to progress made in respect of public order policing. It gives a short background. A work study was commissioned on the 4th of February 2013 to investigate the enhancement of public order policing capacity, and the outcome of the work study indicated that we need to enhance the national structure of public order policing within the division, ORS, and also we need to establish the public order policing mobile units. We needed to enhance the existing public order policing units. We needed to re-establish a domain public order policing. We needed to re-establish additional public order policing units. We needed to establish a dedicated investigating officers. We needed to establish dedicated information officers, information gatherers, establishing of dedicated legal officers, and lastly, establishing of dedicated DPCI investigators. The vision and strategic approach, the vision is towards creating demilitarized, professional, and well-resourced public order policing capacity within the South African Police Service, capable of addressing the 21st century policing demands. And it is anchored in four pillars, being recapacitation, skills development, the review of structures, and modernization, that will be talking to professionalizing and demilitarization of the public order policing. The first pillar that talks to recapacitation, the current public order policing strength as of July 2017 is 5,343. A total of 1,358 posts were granted and filled during the 2016-2017 financial year. A breakdown of the posts, we had 610 lateral advertisements, we had 580 new trainees, 48 video operators were appointed, and then we had 18 re-enlistments and 2 appointments in terms of the Public Service Act entry level. Of the 580 new trainees, 185 represents the Military Skills Development Services. In terms of the 2017-18 financial year, an addition of 905 posts will be ring-fenced towards this environment. Pillar 2 that talks to skills development, the following training programs are available for public order policing and are continuously offered to all public order policing unit members and visible policing members, as well as Metropolitan Police Service members. And the training programs are presented based on the identified needs, which is determined annually. The programs are as follows: crowd management for platoon members, that is the basic; crowd management for platoon commanders; crowd management refresher course, which is offered periodically; the Dangerous Weapons Act 15 of 2013, the First Line Operational Manager course; RG-12 Nyala Operations course; 40mm grenade launcher course; water cannon operator course; first responder to crowd gathering workshop; operational commander's training; first aid levels 1 to 3; video operator's course; information management and analysis course. A continuation of Pillar 2, public order policing training, which was reviewed. The following public order policing related to training programs have been reviewed in order to address identified operational challenges. Mostly it would have been informed by the recommendations of the Falam Commission. Crowd management for platoon commanders to address command and control issues. GR-12 Nyala operators course to increase capacity for specialized driving skills of hardtop vehicles. Public order policing operational commanders training to align the training modules to current and ever-changing public order situation. Crowd conflict management to emphasize technical negotiating skills during public order situations. A continuation of Pillar 2, this reflects a breakdown in terms of courses which were presented during the 2016-2017. It talks to all provinces, and if allowed, Chair, I will not go through the statistics.
I think 14 to 20 pages, 40 to 20, we can regard it as read by members, because it was made available a week ago. Thanks.
Thank you. In terms of my modernization, we are assisted by the CSIR to improve crowd management capability for public order policing, with emphasis on communication capability, crowd control capability, personnel mobility capability. They are researchers that are assisting us towards ensuring that we are able to achieve in terms of implementing those recommendations. And also a further research on radio helmet hearing piece, less than lethal traceable rounds and personnel career. Then we'll move to demilitarization of the SAPS. The National Development Plan says demilitarize the police. The police should be selected and trained to be professional and impartial, responsive to community needs, competent, and inspire confidence. The SAPS has undertaken various initiatives to respond to the call for demilitarization, and the following are amongst those. In 2014, a first SAPS research colloquium was conducted, attended by SAPS members, academics, subject matter experts to address the themes demilitarization and policing in a violent society. Emanating from the colloquium, it was evident that there is not a singular, clear understanding of the concept of demilitarization. The public perspective considers demilitarization as the removing of ranks and changing uniform only. The academic perspective includes issues such as cultural, attitudinal, material, and organizational change. The SAPS subsequently initiated an additional research project relating to demilitarization of the SAPS with the intent to clarify the concept. There was consultation on demilitarization, which was widened through two additional seminars during 2016-17, involving again academics, business professionals, tertiary institutions, human rights organizations, and a wide range of SAPS members. The following key issues emerged: failure to adhere to the norms of a democratic approach to policing leaves a gap for criminal elements to infiltrate the SAPS, which undermines community relations and the morale of members. There is a perception that there is an increasingly violent approach to policing, particularly in dealing with crimes and alleged criminals. The remilitarization of the SAPS between 2020 and 2010, the impact it had on professionalization and conduct, that is what came out of that consultation process. A continuation, the following key issues emerged. SAPS has a responsibility to the community it serves to improve professional conduct by building a culture of police integrity, enhancing accountability at all levels, and promoting community engagement. The following outcomes were also noted by the SAPS. Police visibility must be enhanced to foster improved community relations. The professionalizing of the SAPS must be prioritized. Command and control and the adherence to policy and legislation must be enhanced to improve the conduct of members, thereby establishing a relationship of trust between SAPS and the community. A continuation, members of the National Planning Commission that was involved in the compilation of the National Development Plan in 2011 were also interviewed by the Civilian Secretariat in order to clarify the recommendations on demilitarization of the SAPS. Consideration for demilitarization include revision of recruitment criteria, revision of the nature of training, revision and strengthening of community policing approach with a strong emphasis on human rights, and revision of the rank system to civilianize the police. That is what came out during that interview. The following outcomes were noted by the Secretariat. The research report on management perspective of demilitarization of SAPS make it clear that demilitarization is a concept that involves much more than just a change in ranks. And the Planning Commission, who cannot clearly define the concept, makes implementation difficult for the SAPS management. Towards professionalization of the SAPS, we prioritize the following. We have got key drivers which we believe will assist towards ensuring that we professionalize the SAPS, and the key drivers is recruitment and selection, human resource development, employee health and wellness, promoting ethical conduct and integrity, discipline and consequence management, performance management and accountability, and also the issues of culture of performance management and accountability, uncompromising compliance with the fundamental principles of policing, transformation of our subs, which continuously talk to demilitarization, professionalization, integrity, and discipline. The recruitment and selection, community-based recruitment strategy. We had developed and implemented a community-based strategy for the recruitment, selection, and re-enlistment of new police officers. I must say we currently reviewed the community-based strategy, and it has been presented before the acting national commissioner. And we will also be presented before the transformation task team to evaluate as to whether it does meet the expectations. Communities are engaged in the advertisement of posts in their local communities and briefed about the SAPS in general requirements to become a police officer and all the steps in the recruitment process. Successful applicants are formally presented to their local communities to report anything detrimental that is known about an applicant that can negatively impact on that applicant being enrolled as a police officer. Provincial police and community recruitment boards are held, including representatives from community structures, to make final recommendations to the National Commissioner for approval. Police trainees who have successfully completed the prescribed basic police training sign the code of conduct and take the prescribed oath of office at the colleges before being deployed to stations for duty. Obviously, this will also be presented before the panel of experts and the transformation task team for evaluation.
General, maybe pages 31 till the end, till 44. Maybe if you can just sum that. I know it's very detailed. I think members are au fait with the issues, but maybe in summary some of the highlights. But the detail is fine. We have already read it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. In terms of slide 31, it talks to process of recruitment of appointment, which is divided into phases. We have the first phase that talks to recruitment, and we have the second phase that talks to selection, the third phase that talks to enlistment, and we also have the appointment. Step 5, the medical assessment. Step 6, the security screening and verification of qualifications. In under each every phase, there will be steps that are detailed. In terms of slide number 32, that talks to the human resource development, the basic learning, basic training, learning program. Chair, you will recall we previously indicated that we did review our curricula that talks to basic training learning programs. We took into consideration what is expected of us in the National Development Plan, but also the recommendations from the Falam Commission. Slide number 33, we previously presented before the committee. This is a comparison between the previous the basic training learning program and the current basic learning program. Slide 34 reflects the human resource development learning programs, which we believe will contribute towards professionalism. It talks to those programs that are offered. I'm not sure as to whether I can move on. Thank you. A continuation of the learning programs, which I'll not talk to. Slide 35. Towards promoting ethics and integrity, Chair, we have established an integrity management directorate, which is led by a Brigadier Wasserman, quite experienced. He resort under personnel management. We have already identified priorities in terms of ensuring that we respond to promoting ethics and integrity. Amongst others is the issues of financial disclosure, where the priority will be marketing. Also talking to the what do we mean by ethics and integrity, we need to have a situation where within the organization there is the same understanding. Hence, we prioritized marketing. At the same time, we also ensured that that which needs to be responded to, especially where we are required to disclose, it doesn't suffer while we are marketing. The directorate ensured the implementation thereof. We also appointed ethics officers, we are in the process of establishing the ethics committee. The information note that talks to that is placed before the acting national commissioner, and the deputy national commissioner human resource management will be the champion of the ethics committee, who will be chairing the ethics committee. The role of employee health and wellness in promoting professionalism. Chairperson, we previously presented the role and responsibilities of the employee health and wellness in promoting professionalism. But what we did most importantly is we ensured that our strategies are linked to the strategies of the whole public service towards ensuring that we also respond to what is expected of us as the organization. A continuation, we have a breakdown that talks to the respective environments, your psychologists, your social workers, etc., etc. Discipline and consequence management. Chair, we reviewed our discipline regulations, and we promulgated the regulations on the 1st of November 2016. The difference between the current and the previous is that the current provides for an expeditious process towards finalizing a case. What we mean by that is that we will be able to, I'll give an example where a member would have been involved in a heist and the member was found at the scene. Within 5 days, we will expect of the commander to have compiled a report. Actually, we appointed from levels of brigadier upwards. They will be appointed from levels of brigadier upwards. Members who will consider a comprehensive report that would have been compiled regarding the conduct of the specific member. And within 5 days, that brigadier or major general should be able to pronounce on what needs to happen to that member, and the member will get an opportunity to be accompanied by a representative. And within 5 days, we should be able to pronounce to say, you are expelled from the organization, which is something that we did not have previously. But it also gives, again, an opportunity for members within 2 days, if they want to appeal, to come back to say no, I studied the report. I'm not in agreement with the outcome of the report. And also, the current discipline regulations does not provide for suspension with pay. It provides for precautionary suspensions, and it emphasizes on the finalization of the disciplinary matter within 60 days. Where we will not have finalized, you will only get 30 days. And should we not finalize, automatically the suspension is uplifted.
Can you maybe finalize the next 2 minutes?
Oh, okay, change. Okay, this slide talks to discipline and consequence management. I think I've already spoken to that. It's a continuation. Actually, I covered. Okay, the compliance board. In terms of the compliance board, the SAPS established the compliance board in terms of Section 34 and read together with Section 11 of the SAPS Act. It aims to promote accountability. Actually, it's a board that will be established under management intervention chair. Performance management and accountability, these are the government structures whereby people will be made to account on performance. And then lastly, it's a performance management and accountability cycle. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, General. Members, we're going to take a 7 minutes break, then we come back to questions. 7 minutes. Thank you.
You see, this expedition thing. Yeah. Member will phone me today. She knows that for this problem. When he phones next week, he will say, I am discharged from the police service.
You know, the way SAPS is interpreting this thing,
No, I'm still checking.
Ah, le va a cultivar la dimemba. General, le va a cultivar la dimemba.